Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Hello there. Welcome to everybody to the Bank Marketing Podcast. We're glad to be with you today and very excited about our guest. Dan, thanks for jumping in and helping lead this as well. And we're looking forward to having Chris Cullen with us today.
Yeah, I'm excited for this.
There you go. So welcome, Chris. Thanks for being a part of this. We are truly excited about it. And I think as we kind of introduce you and develop this, I think our listeners today are going to be really excited about the perspective that you're going to bring into this. And we were having some pre-conversation before the podcast today, too, about really, I think, the humanness that you bring into our professional environment. So excited about having you.
Yeah, you guys are lacking that human feel. Is that it?
Well, we just want to make sure we're covering all the bases, right?
Right, right. No, look, yeah. I'm excited about being on here today, man. And you know, as we said, like you said before you press play or whatever on the equipment, man, it is. You know, all this, no matter what it is, we're in human to human sales. Like literally, it's about connecting, period. You know, and if I can help connect in some way, man, then you know, I'm in. Whatever that looks like.
Love it.
Well, yeah, forgive me. And of course, I'm blinding y'all today, but I'm all right.
That's okay. We like your hairdo.
Yeah, I worked hard on it.
Well, let me give the folks here kind of a your official intro, and so they understand a little better who you are as a head coach and a strategist for Team Kellum, your company, and a little bit about what you do as a high-performance mindset coach. I believe I'm couching that correct. And one of the things that I love, and as we go here, we're going to talk a little bit more about igniting your purpose. Your book that came out, and I know that I got a lot out of it, and it's not just a read. It is a working read, correct? And,
it is.
And looking forward to letting you share a little bit more about that and what you do. Your team works in developing high-performance leaders and teams and cultures. I love your expertise you bring in through neuroscience and some of those things. So I can't wait to talk about that a little bit further as well. And knowing your work with professional athletes, I think you cover NFL, NBA, just about every one of those, which is great. And a lot of college athletes as well, coaches, sports teams, those types of things, as well as your work in the corporate environment and work with corporate teams. So we're really excited about how you bring all that together and can talk to some of our folks today. You had a background in 14 years in medical sales. Chris, you and I have known each other personally an awfully long time, and our wives and kids know each other, and mission trip work together and all kinds of stuff. But what I really love seeing is how you've taken so much of your life experience. I don't want to spoil anything here, but even your multiple spinal surgeries and a lot of your largest challenges in life, and now bring that to corporate and other environments about how we can improve ourselves, if I summarize that well. So that's a little bit about you, and man, just really excited about having you today, Chris.
Man, yeah, look, I appreciate it.
Me too. I'm excited for the abundance of Chris's on the podcast. I'm outnumbered. but welcome to the show. I thought we could start with, you know, Chris Bates gave some intro to your background and kind of history there, but I'd love to hear that journey of like, how did you get from medical sales to, you know, being an author, writing Igniting Your Purpose?
Well, you know, it's like John Maxwell says, the dream is free, but the journey is not, right? I feel like the journey I had to go to get here was not a fun journey. And, you know, the shortest that I was in, I was at the peak of my career as a medical sales rep in brain, heart, and spine surgery, mostly. That's what the focus was on. And at the peak, I did have a whole bunch of back surgeries, as you heard him, as you heard Chris talking about, and through that got put on long-term disability, just kicking and screaming. I couldn't believe it. And I was 38 years old, so I was floored. Not really what I expected out of my life, you know, but yeah, that's what happened. And so through that journey, the reason the book is called Ignite Your Purpose is because when my job was taken from me, I thought that was one of the worst things that had ever happened to me. But had that not happened, I wouldn't have known my purpose. At the time, I was, in all honesty, I was making lots of money, and I felt like I was, because I was financially successful, I thought, hey man, yeah, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I learned the hard way that wasn't it, you know, but I'm grateful, man. I'm blessed. You know, I thank the Lord every day for that, as hard as it was. And it's, you know, but through that, to answer your question, the book came to be because someone was asking me about writing a book. And at the time, all these things happened once I was put on disability. And one of them was what was called Ignite Sports Camps. A group of guys came together, and I was a musician. My buddies were professional baseball players. And one of them looked at me, and Chris Snopek looked at me and said, hey, dude, like, what's it like to jam in front of a bunch of people? And I laughed. I was like, what do you mean, bro? What's it like to be on ESPN? That's every man's dream. And that started a conversation about what would it look to take our gifts and go serve what we call the least likely, right? Serve the needy, serve others. And so that's what happened. And even through all the back surgeries and all that, we kept doing all that. And man, it was crazy what happened. And so when I was asked to write a book, I was actually, somebody asked me if I'd write a book on my life, just because all this stuff was happening. And I didn't want to do that. But what I did want to do was use the struggle that I'd been through to show how many amazing things came out of that from people that were, man, just faithful, you know, just good people. And ultimately it was inspired by the kids of the camp Ignite and the counselors.
That's great. I like that theme of, you know, finding the good in people, finding the good, you know, the positive side of your life, of your story, even, you know, even in the face of adversity. Just that phrase is sort of cliche, but like, you know, everybody, you know, has ups and downs, and everybody needs to be reminded, like, there's good things. There's stuff to look forward to. There's, you know, a reason you're here. There's a reason it happened, and getting connected with that is super important.
Chris, that story evolved into your book, and then kind of started to spawn all of this about where you are in coaching and mentoring and all of that. And you work with, you know, to our audiences, bankers, marketers, all these kind of folks. You work with, you know, CEOs and business leaders and athletes and all of that. And you evolved this into a game plan and playbooks and all of that. So tell us a little bit about what those are tangibly and kind of how those work, how they're applicable to everybody.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So first of all, I never dreamed I'd be working with athletes. And you said NBA. No, I don't have the NBA covered. Oh. I got football, baseball, but I don't have the NBA covered. but anyway, so what happened was I was at the time, I was, you know, I tell everybody I was the resident GIMP, right? So all the people that had back trouble would call me and be like, yo, Kellen, like, dude, you've had 10 surgeries. Talk to me about like my back's hurting. What do I do? And I'd be like, okay. And we laugh and joke all the time saying, oh yeah, that's how it started. But when we were putting on the sports camp for kids, which was Ignite, right? We were putting these camps on all the time. I got coaching certifications through that process. And also during that time, I was researching high performance because I've always been fascinated with it. So I ended up developing a system, I guess, from one, I started working with one athlete just one athlete. He had just retired from the NFL or got hurt. And that one athlete, and he would ask me these questions, and I'd already developed like the coaching program, but it wasn't sports oriented. And, you know, you mentioned I came from medical sales, right? So I was used to going up and having conversations with physicians and debating articles, right? I mean, because I always wondered, like, dude, why am I sitting in brain surgery looking at this? You know, like, I felt like I had people fooled. I was looking around going, what, like, how am I in here, man? And yet it was because, you know, we laugh all the time and say, look, man, they what they do is they go find some guys that they know can just talk, you know, just they have some guys and some girls that can just talk to anybody. And they're like, hey, listen, we love the fact that you can talk, but here's the science. You go sell our product, but if you say anything that's not on this form, on this, off this study, this what we call white paper, then, you know, you're fired, right? So that's how it came about, taking that approach. But instead, I wanted to use neuroscience as a way to not have to debate back and forth. And it's just, it is what it is, you know, period. And so then as I'm working, as I started picked up one athlete and then another one and then another one, I started taking all the content and putting in sports analogies, and it's called game plan. And then game plan, then there's, so there's an overall game plan, and then there's a playbook. And so we have, then there's also what we call workouts, right? And it's based off of what's just what we call neuroplasticity, right? Just or brain plasticity, just your brain's ability to be molded, right? To grow neurons literally until you die, which, you know, Chris, when we were growing up, it was like, bro, you better not party too hard, man. You're going to kill off. You'd only got a certain number of brain cells. You remember that? Those stupid, like, people, I remember people saying that, but the truth
is, and I wouldn't know I wouldn't know anything about that, but go ahead. Yeah,
right. Dan, I don't know if you
deny it,
Yeah. But yeah, so that's what happened, and that's what it is. And the game plan is the overarching, the big, you know, the big plan. And then the playbook is the breakdown for the details. And that's how it came about.
Take us through, like, what's in, you know, what does a game plan actually look like? Like, if you're starting to work with a new client, it sounds like it's kind of the first thing you
like
look
that.
At.
The notebook. There you go.
See, it's a book full of stuff. Matt, so one of the things that we did was we researched high performance, right? And there's some common denominators that high performers have. And in fact, Brendan Burchard wrote a great book about it called High Performance Habits, right? And he listed six things that they, and it's things like clarity and increased production, you know, demonstrate courage, you know, things like that. And so we took a whole bunch of research on high performance and then paired it with the neuroscience and the, like, where your brain's going in that process. So the game plan itself, is that's what you want to know, the difference between the game plan and the playbook? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the game plan itself is the, like I said, that's the big plan. The game plan is everything from the studies, right? The documentation, the workouts that we call, the things that you can do when you feel your, you know, there's a saying, we say behavior over emotion. Well, how do you choose behavior over emotion, right? Like, there's a step-by-step process on how to grow that, how to create new habits, how to increase your confidence. And that's what that big book right there is. And it's all these, you know, like I said, workouts. The playbook is basically a manifesto, if you will, of self-discovery, of self-awareness, right? So for instance, if I ask you, which is what happened to me, what are your top five values? If you're like most people, you're going to go, well, family, you know, I like, but when you do that, you're thinking about what your values should be instead of going
what they are.
Right. So it's who you should be versus who you actually are. And we have a process of figuring that out. You know, it's we use a game, actually. It's just a card game. It's pretty fun, you know. People always trip out, you know, because it happens so fast. But, you know, so the playbook is about you. It is literally everything is you. It's your triggers. It's the things in your life that you need in your life and the things in your life you don't need in it. And it's not very easy. You know, it's like you read it and it's like, oh, these are pretty quick. Oh, yeah, I know these answers, but it's usually a little bit harder once you start writing it down.
You get through the series of questions or choices and start to develop the picture of kind of who you are at your core, right? Like you're using the, I've worked on values for like kind of core values for my company. And I always read the definition of, you know, them as not, like you're saying, like not what you want to be, but kind of what you truly believe, like the things about you that don't change, that 30 years from now would be the same, right? That are your core, you know, truly your drivers. And so based on those values that you have, like, how can you use those to, you know, find your path?
And that's a good question. Let me say this. One of the things that motivated me so much about values was when I had a guy that came up to me and when I saw this person, he was in his 70s and close to retiring, but had all the money in the world. Like everything that you envision success to be, this guy was it. And yet he and I had this conversation, tears in his eyes. He's like, Chris, there's got to be more, man. What is this? And I just was like, whoa, man. Like, wow. And that, for whatever reason, that we started talking about values. He couldn't name them. And when I was writing the book, I went and asked, I bet you I asked 100 people, probably more than that. Hey, man, what are your values? And nobody could answer it. I had like two people actually say, yeah, and they were able to tell me. And so anyway.
As I was just kind of riffing on, you know, you have your core values, you sort of get on that journey of self-discovery and understand who you are. But, you know, how do those core values go into the finding your path or, you know, getting into the day-to-day stuff that you focus on with?
Yeah.
With
and Dan, you know, us as business owners and leaders, Chris, I love what you mentioned is that the core values should not be the things that we aspire to, you know, right. And so, you know, probably some of our listeners today are, you know, leaders of companies and banks and so on and so forth. And it's not just writing down, well, integrity, this, that, you know, and all that. It's not just coming up with a list of what you aspire to as a company or as an individual. It's more what you're composed of and then how you carry that out. Is that more it, Chris?
It should be your MO, right? Your method of operation, like how you do things. In fact, what we do, we call them your guardrails, right? Think about all the tensions in your life that you have. But yet, if we start, when I'm coaching people and I'm like, okay, well, let's talk through some things. All right. You're feeling tension here. What are your values? And they're like, I mean, didn't we do that card game the other day where you like told me, you know, my values are this, this, and this. I'm like, yeah, something. And as they start going, well, you know, whoa, I get it. And what happens is they take that in that conversation, they take whatever that circumstance or situation is and they filter it through those values. Things look a lot different. And that's just one example.
Can you give us some examples of values, or like, maybe I'm kind of thinking in my head, like, what is a, you know, what, how do you define a value? Like, what is a value versus something that somebody might think is a value, but isn't?
Yeah, man, that is absolutely. So personally, I'll do personally and professionally, right? Like personally, yeah, you know, like I've used the example of, well, family, you know, is a value, like it, right. It just, if family is, you don't have to, like most people are like, well, I got to put family. I got to do family, man. Like, look, man, we get it. If it's a, you know, that can be a secondary value. It's not, doesn't mean you don't love your family, but like what gets you up and gets you rolling, right? Like for instance, for myself, it's communication. One of the reasons that I value communications is because I learned how poorly I communicate at times. That's 27 years of marriage, right? And so as I'm like, you know what? I value communication, but the depth of my communication was not something that I valued. So I was able to, because I was motivated by that, the value of communication, I was able to then go deeper and have the desire to learn to go deeper in my communicating skills, if that makes sense. And professionally, it's like I'm in New Orleans right now working with a company that their values are teamwork, execution, and excellence, right? And so everything that they're doing is filtering through as best they can, teamwork, execution, excellence, and making those values extremely practical all the way down to having a meeting and saying, okay, after the meeting, how did we practice teamwork, execution, and excellence? You know, just really making it part of the culture. And it's amazing what happens when you do that. And that's just values. There's so many other areas to focus on as well.
I bet there are. So thinking about that, that's a good segue to this question we talked about a little bit before we started too, is what are some of the commonalities that you see with those with successful corporate teams? You know, yeah. What's something that our listeners can take and apply to their teams that you see as common traits, Chris?
I tell you that the number one thing I see is companies that are, they're like wallowing around and they're like, dude, can you come in here? Cause I do consulting stuff as well. And they're like, can you come in here and talk about that or whatever? And almost every time I go in there, it's because they're not living their values and they're scattered, man. It's like you're going an inch deep and a mile wide. Whereas, man, you filter everything through those values and you truly indoctrinate that into who you are as a team, as a company. Man, once it becomes part of the culture, it's really difficult to remove it from based on what I've seen, because people buy into it. People buy into your values.
So part of, there's some benefit to defining, I mean, if you define them and you kind of either literally or proverbially get them up on the wall for everybody to see, it starts getting kind of ingrained. But then it sounds like there's also, that's not it, right? There's some active stuff you do, take the last 5 minutes of every meeting and just talk about how you applied those values today. And then when you go into the next meeting, you're already kind of thinking about it and it's starting to change your actions.
Yeah, because haven't we all been in a meeting or gone to a company before, and on the door, you know, they're touting these three values, and you walk in there and go through customer service and it's, you don't experience any of those values.
Yeah. They put the values up on the wall as a marketing thing and not as a, you know, true core, like who we are.
Right.
You know, darn exactly well, everybody listening or watching this show is sitting there going, yeah, oh gosh, yeah, you know, I did that 10 minutes ago. That's, yeah.
Well, and it's, I think it's, a, we haven't talked a lot about, I think we've only said the word bank, you know, twice, once to say bank marketing show. And, you know, you mentioned a minute ago, but I see this a lot at banks of, you know, it's always on the website. It's always on the history or the about us page of, you know, our founding, you know, board 100 years ago wanted to do this. And I think it's really important for lots of businesses, but especially the bankers listening to this, is that you talk about it a lot and it's present at a lot of places, but you have to remember to come back to it and look at it and think about how you're weaving that into your day-to-day, into your customer interactions, into staff meetings and all that. Otherwise it is just words on the wall.
And even the marketing principles of that, Chris, because Dan and I talk a lot about helping our bank clients develop their superpower and then marketing it, because everybody in the banking industry does money. But, you know, everybody has checking accounts and mortgages and small business loans and all that. So, right, everybody kind of quote unquote does a lot of the same thing. So what is it that's your real differentiators? And from a marketing perspective, it's developing that superpower. So is it, Dan, a couple episodes ago when we had Shannon Aker on, the president of the Bank of Brookhaven, man, so community centric and focused and not, I mean, both ways into it and back out of it. And it was just awesome to hear that, and was obvious that's their core strength, right? That's their core superpower and their selling point. So as you're working, Chris, with some of these teams, how are you kind of helping them to develop that? We were talking about values and now really identifying what it is that they're about individually and corporately.
Yeah, man, it's a great question. Look, you know, I always say this, man, there's that companies take on the personality of their leaders, right? And I mean, you see it all the time. And you see it a lot of times in the disruption from a change in leadership. And someone may hold these values, and then another leader comes in trying to operate under the values of a person that he doesn't, I mean, he doesn't value those same things, right? There's this thing that we do, it's called the four C's, right? And it's clarity, confidence, courage, calling. Clarity, confidence, courage, calling. And so now think of it in terms of a playbook, right? When you get clear, when you're clear on the plays, now you're confident, right? Because clarity literally produces confidence. Confidence, now you know the plays, man. You're like, okay, and now you can take the steps, right? And the more you take the steps, the more confident you get. I use this example a lot with wide receivers, right? Wide receivers go on to a new team. The coach has a different way of doing things. They learn the plays. They get confident in the plays. And they're just running the plays. And now they can run the plays. But once they're confident, they can put their own move on it, right? Put their own little touch to that play. Because now that they're doing that, they have the courage that it takes to step out. But the confidence is still there driving the courage that came ultimately from the clarity. And when you do that, what happens? It leads you to what we call the calling. It can be a personal calling, a personal understanding who you are, a why, if you will. It can be the calling of a company, right? I mean, look, if banks, yeah, you deal with money, right? I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. But it's nowhere close to the same thing because people, today's generation, one of the craziest stats that blew my mind is today's generation, they would rather buy from a purpose-driven company and spend more money than they would a company that's not purpose-driven because it's literally who they are. And if you're marketing to that generation, you have to literally lead by example because they're going to see through it. And that's why if you don't have a playbook, if you don't have a game plan, if you don't have the clarity of knowing who you are as an organization, what you stand for, man, you're going to be sitting there, in my opinion, you're going to be sitting there with a bunch of gray-haired clients as some younger kids come in there and start doing the exact same thing you're doing. They're just purpose-driven.
Yeah, and I think that's so... My brain is sort of spinning on lots of different applications to banks here, but you know, I think we're talking about you're not throwing out a Facebook ad with here's our bank's five core values, right? But it's more of, you know, those things and you can talk about them more. And I think so much of what Chris and I do, Chris Bates and I do, I got to remember to separate those two out here. You know, in working with banks is there's lots and lots of banks. Everybody offers pretty similar products. So the key of marketing is differentiating in a authentic way that connects with your community. And I think, you know, it always goes back to those values, right? If your bank, you know, if your bank has a day of service, you know, once a year where all the employees talk about that, right? That's part of your values. And it might be a reason that, you know, a customer chooses you or looks at you more. They're making a banking decision. That's a small example, but I think it applies real broadly too.
And Chris, I loved what you said and how that all comes into the calling, which is so much about your purpose that you've mentioned several times as well, because again, is the purpose of your bank to make loans and, you know, wrestle with rates and so on and so forth? Or is the purpose of your bank propagated in how you impacted the lives of that young couple that's a first-time home buyer and they got their first mortgage with you, or a business loan, right? Which may be somebody opening a little coffee shop, but that could also be financing a hotel that literally changes the face of a community, right? I mean, and man, if you don't think that's a calling, so it's not about the dry business of numbers and money, right? It's about finding that whole calling. So I love how you have that specked out, Chris. That's really great. Yeah.
You know something, Chris, I appreciate that. One of the things, man, with today's generation is that you could literally go, hey, we're a bank. We're about making money. But let me show you what we value with doing with our money. We serve, boom. I mean, you could be that just blatant in their face, and they're like, they're going to get it. They're going to be like, oh, okay.
Call cool. it what it is.
Yeah. This dude's so honest. Like, man, we're making money so we can, one, serve people. Like, right? We like money, but we like money so that we can serve other people. And I heard somebody years ago just say, man, everything rises and falls on leadership. And what do leaders do? They lead the way. And man, and I go and think about what Gandhi said, man, be the change you want to see in the world. Like, you know, I'm no big Gandhi follower, but that's a quote that I absolutely love. Be the change you want to see. Or John Maxwell, lead the way, period. I love it, man.
Yeah.
I love it. And you know what, man, the thing is, like minds attract, right? And so you go lead the way, guess what you're going to do? One, yeah, you'll be financially successful, you know, in what we're talking about, right? But also you're going to draw people to you that want to change, man. They want to make change in the world just like you do. And man, when you are clear, people want to follow people that are stepping out. And when we understand cognitively what's going on, you know, there's a reason only certain people step out, right? Those people that take that first step. And when you understand cognitively that, man, your brain's designed to do what's trying to keep you safe. It don't want you stepping outside of your comfort zone. And it's not you. It's just the way, I mean, it doesn't want you to get eaten by a bear, you know, or whatever that looked like, you know, or what. But it's just keeping you in your comfort zone. It's trying to conserve energy. And when you understand that tolerance level is right here, and we just push against it over and over and over again, when we have that confidence and we have that, or that clarity and that confidence and that courage to do what we call launch and adjust, man, step out and then adjust and watch people come to you, man. I see it all the time. It's contagious.
So, Chris, we've got a question for you. In the industry that we're working with bankers a lot, it is so often about risk and risk aversion. And what you were just talking about is that inhibitor of fear and those types of things. And I know it from you having come in and worked with my agency and our team here, and also having worked through your book here. And I'm not going to show the audience any of my answers. I'll keep the book turned this way. But what I love about your book, Chris, is it's so much of a proliferation of what you've described and the processes and developing it all. But you've also got some really great workbook stuff in here, so that the further I got through it, the more applicable and tangible it became for me as a business owner. For me as a husband, a father, a person, all those things and the cross-section of those. So if one of our listeners today is risk-averse about some of the things that you've been talking about and moving forward through clarity and through all of those things, whether it's in a micro version, I'm just really stuck in a rut today, I can't you know, Dan wanted me to get all this paperwork to him, and I just, man, I can't do that. Is it, either I'm stuck in that, or the company is flat, and we're not, you know, and we're kind of stuck. What are some of your thoughts, Chris, and things you could share with a listener that feels stuck in that?
Well, first of all, I appreciate that question, man, because I've been there, right? I mean, I teach this stuff, and I get there from time to time, and it personally, right? And to me, it all boils back to one thing. Why are you doing it? It can be whatever. It can be, why are you getting out of bed every day? Why are you working on this project? You know, research says that when we ask ourselves that question and answer it, it takes an average of 3 to 5 times of answering why, to get to that, to the core of that. And what I have found is that most people aren't operating with under the core. It's surface level. And when you know, when you are motivated by why, well, literally by why you're doing it, I have found, and my clients have found, is that when you practice that, man, you don't find yourself stuck as much as you would otherwise, because you're motivated by it.
I love that. And the descending whys, or I know I've heard different names of that exercise. I've done that with clients before, where, you know, you might say, well, why do we run Google ads? Well, because we want more customers. Well, why do you want more customers? Because, yeah, you know, we want the bank to grow. Why do you want the bank to grow? So, you know, you eventually get to a point of like, so we can help our community, so we can provide services to the disadvantaged, so we can, you know, do any number of other things. And it's hard to do on your own, but I mean, there's such value in getting to that root cause.
Mm-hmm. There is, man. And I'll tell you what, too, there's value in what I can just say, based on my experience, there's value in it for your employees, and helping walk them through that same process, or what we call it, the playbook. Some call it the why. Nick Saban calls it the process, right? Michael Gervais calls it your philosophy, right? Just whatever that is. But understanding why you get up, literally why you get out of bed in the morning. And just a quick example, right? So as my book says, you know, I'm passionate about helping people discover and become who God created them to be, right? I call that the 110% version of you. And when I'm at work, I'm helping people dream, decide, and become, period. But ultimately, no matter what I'm doing, if I'm serving at camps or whatever, it all falls back to how I'm doing that with work. I'm using neuroscience and neuroplasticity and brain plasticity and neurogenesis and putting a game plan together to help people get there. But it's still the same thing. It's the same motivator, if that makes sense.
That's so great. Yeah. Chris, when you came in several months back and worked with my team on our day-long retreat, literally everybody in the room had the same sensation that I'm having right now, which is, man, do we really have to end this?
Oh, man.
Seriously. This is such great stuff. And so much of what I love about what you and Dan and I have been talking about is it's applicable to the only qualifications, you have to be a human being to understand what it is we're talking about, and you can apply it, right?
Right.
This side of that, everything that you've talked to us about today and that we find in your book is applicable to our humanness and also our corporateness. So great stuff, man. Really love it.
Well, look, thank you, man. And look, I just want to point this out. Like, don't mislead yourself in thinking this is just for business, right? Because we have a personal playbook, we have a business playbook, and we have a marriage playbook. Like, what does that look like in your marriage? I walked a young couple through it about a month ago. And man, they were like, you know, I've been married 27 years. Chris, you've been married a long time. They're like, we're battle tested, right? We figured this stuff out along the way, kind of. But to be able to share that with a married couple, and it's the same thing you're telling your bank clients. It's just a different type of clarity, because clarity leads to confidence, which leads to courage, which leads to calling, period.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for this. Chris, do you have just a couple of minutes to stick around? We like to call it our lightning round here. Yeah. And pop you with some sure. some cool questions. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Right on.
Yeah. Go ahead and jump in, Dan, if you want.
Yeah. So we'll, you know, if you've got a longer answer, you know, we've got a few seconds, just so you don't have to rush through, but we'll hop in. So first one we ask is, you know, can you share a personal best or a business best, something great that's happened to you?
Well, look, the best thing personally that's happened to me is this, because the way this program was built out was on myself, because I was, man, when you've had 10 surgeries and I mean, there were some dark times, you know, and one of the things that I share with people, it's kind of, you know, it's not my proudest moment, but was it, you know, like after one of those surgeries, just trying to go to the bathroom, you know, and not being able to do that. And my daughter was the only one home, you know, and her having to walk me, you know, and help me up off the floor, like just, you know, the going from such a low to then practicing these things and literally changing. I mean, changing, like, you know, I don't take pain pills anymore. I don't do all that. And I'm, you know, I exercise every day now. And there was a period of my life I didn't think that was ever going to happen again. A long, significant period of time that I didn't think that was going to happen. And so for me, game plan and playbook, it's just a testimony.
That's great.
Love that.
So other than your own, what is your favorite book or other resource?
Okay. So, well, as a man of faith, I'll say the Bible. Outside of that, though, that's a really poor choice of words. But man, there's a great book called It Takes What It Takes by Trevor Moat. Trevor was, he died recently of cancer of some type, but he was Russell Wilson's the quarterback, or now for Denver, but he was with Seattle. He was this high performance coach, and he wrote a book and it's called It Takes What It Takes, because it's about neutral thinking. And I highly encourage anybody watching this to go get that book and understand, like, this is what this neutral thinking, you know, you can use it for kindergartners, you know, or whatever age, or you can use it for the top 1% of the athletes in the world, like Russell Wilson. And it teaches you how to think neutrally and, man, stay in the moment one second to the next. It's powerful.
Wow.
That's great. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to that one for sure.
Well, and I've got a kindergartner too. So I'm like, oh, maybe.
There you go.
Maybe that would work there too.
Oh, there you go.
what's the most impactful piece of advice you've received?
Serve first. Add value first. I heard John Maxwell say that years ago. And it blew me away. And so I started practicing that. And for me personally, that's serve, period.
That's awesome. What is something you always tell your staff or your clients?
There's nothing, you weren't created to be average. There's greatness in you because greatness created you. Now I say that, I mean, that might not be what you were looking for, but I say that over and over.
No, That is exactly it, Chris. And I have, again, you and I have known each other for a long time. And what I love about watching you present day is watching you live that out. You know, and knowing that you're not average, and using your description in words is the 110% of you. So it's cool. Absolutely. And it's been so great having you here today. And I know that there've got to be a bunch of our listeners that would love to maybe continue the conversation with you or look further into it, or certainly to get Igniting Your Purpose and all of that. So for everybody listening or watching, we'll have all of this in the show notes and the link to your book so that people can go grab it. And I certainly want to encourage people to do that, man, because it's a great one. It's a life changer. So kudos to you for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about how else folks can get in touch with you, Chris.
Man, it's real simple. One, you can Google me. That's, you know, it'll take you to the website. But, man, Chris at teamkellum.com. just CHRIS, Chris at teamkellum.com.
Perfect. Man, we can't thank you enough for this. From the front end of this, we knew that this was not exclusively about banking, you know, but it was, again, about our humanness and all that. So love the work that you're doing and what you got to come on the show and share today. And can't thank you enough, my friend.
Brother, thank you, man. Look, and y'all keep it up, bro. You're making a difference, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. I know I'm feeling some inner calm and definitely inspired to go on the rest of my day. And really appreciate you taking time to chat with us.
Right on, Dan. Oh, well, I appreciate it, guys. Y'all are great.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks.
Bye, bye. Bye, y'all.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts. And join us next time.